journey through Time Lords and space. This week, we talk extremists. I am Dolly Domofsky, one of your faithful Time Lords or companions or whatever. Joining me, Marcus Beer.
Hello.
Steven Strum.
Hi.
And Sean Norton.
Hello.
This is the third time that all three of us have been together, or all four of us. See, I've already messed it up. All four of us have been together this season. So we're batting 50%, gentlemen. I think we're getting there. Hey, how you guys doing? Doctor Who, right? Am I right?
I can take it or leave it.
We have a bunch to talk about. I didn't see any rumors explode this week, thankfully, or rumors pop up this week, thankfully, of Doctor Who related stuff. So we can, however, I can bring up a little bit about my John Barrowman, Billy Piper experience at this weekend's Motor City Comic Con.
You had a threesome.
I only wish, and I believe John Barrowman probably wishes as well. So before we get into this week's extremists episode, I did want to just kind of break a little bit of information. We were initially planning to get interviews with John Barrowman and Billy Piper, and a bunch of folks had sent questions our way for us to ask. Unfortunately, they had canceled all interviews going into this weekend. They're very busy, and they had a lot of fan events actually around the con over here this weekend. So didn't get a chance to that, but they both had panels. I stuck around for the John Barrowman panel. And John Barrowman is one of the nicest dudes on the planet when it comes to being an actor who is, you know, very friendly, very, very good to his fans and good to all the fans that are into sci-fi. And obviously, Captain Jack Harkness, also on Malcolm Merlyn on Arrow. He's been in a bunch of other things. There were a few questions, and I'm going to write all this stuff up. I've actually recorded the panel and a bunch of other stuff related to it. I'll try to get the audio edited and figured out, but I can't answer a couple of things. One was that somebody had asked us to ask him what his favorite doctor was, and he said David Tennant, flat out, David Tennant. So no issues there, no questions, or no second guessing. His favorite doctor is David Tennant. And we also asked, you know, is he trying to get back on to the Doctor Who universe? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, he'd love to be back on it, but he's basically not necessarily given up from his standpoint, but it has to come from the fans going forward. And so at one point he said people were asking questions nonstop, or they're sending emails nonstop to the BBC, and the BBC has to reply to every email. I think that's part of their repertoire, but they have to reply to every email that comes.
Oh, really?
In. Yes. And so they had contacted Barrowman's team and contacted him and said, please stop telling your fans to write us because it's sucking up all our resources. We can't actually get to other work. So he did suggest that, you know, obviously fans need to get some type of movement going because it's out of his hands. So if anything, maybe not necessarily an email campaign, maybe there's something else that fans can do with us. But that's where we ended with that. He, on the subject of Torchwood, quote unquote, coming back, even though it was sort of reported as a fifth season, and I know that's the way that the Big Finish PR blast was sent out, he says it is extremely faithful to the Torchwood we all know and love. And he said it is Torchwood. It's not necessary. He wouldn't say it necessarily wasn't like season five, but it is an audio drama. But he said it is Torchwood for everything we love about Torchwood. He's super happy to do that. So these are the Big Finish audio dramas that start in August, I believe. So him and Eve, I forget her name. Eve Miles, thank you. And so, yeah, those are just a couple of tidbits that came out. Some questions I was able to ask when I was, loud enough. He did show up to the panel wearing a blue TARDIS dress. that he said that somebody was selling on the show floor, and proceeded to take his pants off at one point as well. So he was only wearing the dress and his underwear, I guess, underneath. And that man is a very he is just a complete ball of energy. And if for people that have anybody that's ever met him, he comes, you know, obviously he's darker. He plays these dark roles on TV in some respects, but just total full energy, totally a fun dude.
He's one of those people I've never heard anything bad about.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, people just seem to like hanging out with him, like from the conventions, totally. Just to like running into him in the street or that garage sale or whatever. Like, he just seems wonderful.
Yeah, he had some great stories. He is also very open about everything. I mean, he swears like a sailor. He doesn't hold back, doesn't pull any punches. He has to constantly apologize for swearing to this panel. I mean, there were people there with their kids and had to constantly apologize for swearing. He had, at one point, he had asked, so there was a sign language, sign interpreter on stage with him for people that were hard of hearing. And the venue provided it. And so he asked her how to sign hung like a donkey. And the entire time he kept doing the hung like a donkey sign to the crowd. So it was fantastic. Great dude. Hopefully get to see more of him in the Doctor Who universe. And he alluded to some projects he has coming up, but he wouldn't really get beyond that that are non-Who related. So John Barrowman. I'll try to get the transcript up of everything and type it all out for everybody as well at some point. But beyond that, we are gathered here today to talk Extremis, the sixth episode of the 10th series of Doctor Who. Quick rundown of the episode. The Doctor and Bill and Nardole are summoned by the Pope to read and examine a book called the Veritas. I believe it was called the Veritas. Anybody who reads it commits suicide almost instantly, as quickly as possible because of the information that's held in there. And the Doctor and team head over to the Vatican, to the secret library, find the book. Doctor is still blind, by the way. Find the book. They meet these kind of ghosts or undead monks that are there, these kind of beast monks, and come to find out that the reason that the people are killing themselves is because they find out that they're actually living in a simulation that a powerful being is using to figure out how to take over Earth or destroy the Earth. So he's this creature, this demon, this being has created this realistic simulation. The episode ends with the Doctor realizing it after everybody else sort of disappears, and sends himself an email to the real world where the real Doctor gets it and proceeds to turn around and tell the person in the vault, who we find out is Missy, that I'm going to need your help. So, in a nutshell, that's the episode. A lot happened this episode. Before I dive into what I think, I want to hear from Sean, because we usually wait till the end for Sean. We've been going in with Marcus and Steven a lot lately. Sean, what did you feel about this episode? Did you like it? Did you enjoy it?
You would pick me to go first in 1 week. I didn't watch it twice. I really did enjoy it, actually. And I keep saying that we are, you know, we're seeing the best of the season. And every week it keeps getting better. And I stand by that. I think this was wonderful. Who I think they did the whole, it was all a dream thing in a really unique way. Mm-hmm. It harkens back sort of to some of the Dream Lord stuff, but very different and very cool. I should, to clarify, not to harken back to that specifically, but that kind of style and mm-hmm. what's real and what's not. Mm-hmm. And it was just wonderful. Like it was wonderful. Yeah. Who, from top to bottom. And it's, you know, I'm sure if you really stop and think about it, there's some stuff you could nitpick or maybe some, you know, plot holes or whatever, but I would go ahead.
No, as I say, the TARDIS not being able to translate the Pope.
But maybe. That's the thing. Like that, yeah, I can see yeah. as actually being like a really cool piece of the story. That if you go back and watch it, you realize that's something that the simulation couldn't do.
Correct. Because
it didn't know that. Like that stuff's awesome.
And the numbers, and the simulation couldn't get the number because of the randomness.
Yes. I've seen some stuff. People. You know, I've seen some of the techier people out there being like, well, you're going to tell me this simulation can run 1,000 or 1,000,000 years or whatever, and it's a random number generator, blah, blah. But it's like, guys, get your heads out of the sand. Come on. Like, this is wonderful television. Mm-hmm. And it really was. It really, really was. And I think I'm going to pass the floor off to you guys while you talk, and I'd rather respond because I'd rather have this sort of back and forth flow than sort of go on and on about this, but – I'd love to hear what Steve or Marcus really liked and then sort of piggyback on that. But all in all,
and what Dolly really liked?
Well, I mean, you and I were already interacting, but I guess if you want to share what you know what? Why don't you go next? Because you are a wonderful host, also often waits. So what did you think?
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Sean. No, I love this episode. This is one of my favorite episodes. One of my top three of all the episodes. I absolutely loved it. The simulation idea was fantastic. It was done so well. There were it mirrors a little bit of the stuff that Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing this season.
Oh,
for
yeah.
fans of
visiting the framework
and the book, the dark book. I loved. Here's the best part. I loved that we got a solid response for what these Sonic sunglasses are. They're more than just Sonic sunglasses. They're actually sort of, helpful tools. And B, I love that it was Missy in the vault because that seemed like the most obvious answer, and that and the John Sim thing. I'm glad it was Missy, and the way it was explained was fantastic. In fact, by the way, Michelle Gomez killed it when they're trying to pick her up. They say pick her up, and she goes,
decorum, maybe?
Have some respect. I've just
been executed. I'm a little tired.
Yeah, I'm a little tired. So I love this episode. It was so good. From the start to the finish, everything flowed. So, I mean, even down to Nardole saying that he's there to watch a doctor and kick his ass if he gets out of line. How brilliant was that?
Yeah, as endorsed by his
raving
wife.
I'm raving about this episode.
So I know you guys were sort of – I guess we all saw that the Sonic shades coming back were sort of like a possible obvious thing. Mm-hmm. But how did you guys feel about how they were executed? Because I kind of liked that he can't – like he still can't see, right? It's almost like he's looking through like bits and pieces of like the Matrix with like sort of framed on the side. So I thought that was a nice
Arkham Vision from like the – I mean, so the video game references in this were amazing, right? From you – I mean, everything from like Grand Theft Auto and Super Mario Brothers to – Arkham Asylum with this kind of Arkham Thief vision. There was a ton of video game references in this.
Yeah.
Steven, I want to hear your thoughts.
I'm not used to going after Sean, so it's just throwing me off.
You just complained about that last week.
it takes more than one episode for me to adjust. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, Sean. I like this episode a lot. I really liked, talking about this with my brother a little bit. My brother, he's not the world's biggest Doctor Who fan or anything like that, but he does enjoy a good episode when he, happens to catch it with me. And we kind of talked about this idea that, like, this is the, like, it was all a dream ending and it shouldn't work. That should mm-hmm. be the most, like, the most rote fucking like joke of an ending in history, but like they make it work in this really useful way first part in a three-part episode that we know of, that's going to be going on here going forward. And it's kind of doing the Doctor Who type thing that they'd like to do with the three-parters, which is that like turn left and like the mm-hmm. is it sound of drum or whatever the first episode of the third season finale was, where the part one is almost a self-contained story all unto itself, but what is self-contained about it is the like simulation story. They still carry over consequences, both like emotional and moral and plot-wise, outside of the dream. So yes, it's all a dream. And we've seen that go very badly. I think it would be like Santa Claus, the thing, Antarctica episode, dream world thing, where it's just like everybody forgets everything. And it's literally like, it's all a dream and nothing matters. Whereas in this, like, we see the Doctor carry forward a lot of that stuff by, like, you know, having that super clever reveal with the, like, the emailing himself that we see at the very beginning of the episode and everything like that, pulling forward. And, you know, so there are going to be consequences to this. But more than just plot consequences, with, like, it's such a great setup for, like, who the villains are going to be, you know, like the setup of, like, oh, these villains have been, like, doing this for whoever knows how long, you know, like, they've been planning, they've been preparing, they've, you know, like, it elevates them to this level. It elevates the plot of whatever's coming next to mm-hmm. a certain level, because we know that going in, the stakes are already pretty high, because we're already dealing with somebody who wants to deal with, like, high level, like, world conquering threat type stuff, and they're not only that, they're prepared for it. But we have the emotional kind of payoff with, like, again, they're so good about Peter Capaldi and Bill this season. Like, their interactions are always so on point, and like the having Bill come out of the simulation, or the Doctor come out of the simulation and everything like that, and telling Bill to call up Penny to ask her on a date and stuff like that, like, because it was a perfect simulation of the world before and stuff like that. And then the Doctor telling her that she should call up Penny right away and go on a date and stuff like that, like, caring about his companion's personal life. And mm-hmm. said, what was that?
It was so nice.
Yeah. It was just a really nice emotional thing that shows how much the Doctor cares. And, like, you know, there's another great line in this episode which is the, like, look up the Doctor under cause of death, and, like, the guy's like wristwatch just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going, you know, ticking up the number of corpses that the Doctor's made over time. That could come across, and I think that, like, that sentiment that, like, the Doctor kills, you know, like, destroys mm-hmm. all the time, and, like, you know, leads to a lot of destruction, could come across as, like, very, very nihilistic and very, very, like, or even, like, glorifying his, like, murder and stuff like that. But, like, the fact that he has that kind of, like, human connection with Bill at the end of the episode, where he is, like, telling her, like, hey, you should try and go on this date right away. Like, this small thing that should seem completely insignificant in the grand scheme of things. Like, oh, Penny might be dead tomorrow for all, you know, either the Doctor or, you know, soon Bill will know. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that he takes time out of his routine to say that this is an important thing, like, kind of shows the kind of, like, tender heart behind the Doctor that I always really appreciate and think that makes this show spin round. And it reminds me of all those times that the Doctor has been in a situation where he has had to destroy an alien civilization because they were irredeemable, or they were going to put themselves in a situation where they were going to kill even more people or conquer even more people or do something more aggressive. But he has also given them chances. You know, he always, like, there's so often, you know, there's been many episodes, like, struggling to come up with a specific example, but there have been so many episodes where the Doctor said, I have to give them a chance, you know, before I destroy them. I have to, even like the Daleks or something like that at some point, I feel like he's done, where it's like, I have to give them a chance before I wipe out their entire species, because this is like, there's no coming back from this. And just having that little tiny emotional through line makes me remember those moments and doesn't make the Doctor just feel like he's like, oh, look at how badass he is. You know, he's killed all these people. Ah, you know, that's not the point. The point is that, like, when he kills, it is, there is weight behind it, and there's importance behind it. And the fact that he cares about people shows that, like, you know, all those deaths weigh heavy on his conscience, as it should. And they do that with a single line at the end of the episode, or, like, you know, like a single exchange of dialogue at the end, and one near the very beginning. And it's just so handily done with this, like, show don't tell mentality. And between Pearl Mackey and Peter Capaldi, like, the way that they're able to get that stuff across throughout this season has been super stellar. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I really, really like this episode from pretty much front to finish. I think we're really getting to be on a real good roll this season, coming after Oxygen last week. And, you know, Knock Knock I didn't love, but it was, you know, it was passable. And then I liked Thin Ice before that. Like, I think we're holding pretty steady as far as Capaldi, especially as far as Capaldi seasons go at this point. So there you go.
It's it really is something. And can we talk for a second about how in the span of 30 minutes, they have done something they've really, like, we as a group have complained about this for years. They took this, I don't even know if they have a name, but they took these bad guys and they elevated them to threat level, like Dalek, right? Yeah. Like, this is a massive threat and it's super credible. And all it took was one episode. Like, it's phenomenal. Like, it really makes you appreciate what we've been missing this whole time.
It makes you appreciate some of the, like, it kind of calls to mind, like, that old time of, like, you know, back when the silence was still a credible threat and the angels were still a credible threat and stuff like that. Because, like, you know, Stephen Moffat used to be able to do that shit. He used to be able to take one episode, set up a villain in that episode, and, like, suddenly that villain feels like the scariest thing in the world. And all you need is to, like, this one core concept. And here, they don't have, like, a core concept around them the way that, like, the silence do. You look away, you forget. The angels have to look away and, or, you know, blink and they can move type thing. These guys, you know, they're a little bit more intricate than that. But, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, he sets up this, that's, I think, why this, why I hope this two-parter coming up, or the next two parts, rather, is going to be impactful, is because they've already got all that setup out of the way, so we don't have to spend the next two episodes just setting up what they are trying to do, because we know what they're trying to do. They're going to conquer the Earth, and we know that they're a threat because we had an episode saying that they're a threat. We can hopefully just hit the ground running. And I mean, we'll see what actually happens, but there you go.
And they're new, right, Marcus? I mean, this isn't some old Who threat that we've seen before, right? Like, not only have they established a credible enemy, they've done it with somebody that's completely new, unless I'm mistaken. Yeah.
As far as I know.
That's awesome.
So, Marcus, let's hear what you have to say about this episode.
It was shit. First of all, I'm going to draw your attention, boys and girls. If you are on a computer, open your interweb browsers, point to the Lonely TARDIS Facebook page, and take a look at the picture I shared a couple of days ago from my good friend Andre in the UK, the guy who did the Peter Capaldi movie video for me. He actually posted to his Twitter some posters. He took a picture of a wall that had some posters on it. And if you look at the picture, it's the monks.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
That picture. So there's a couple of different, three different posters of various monks with the word truth above them. And then there's also other posters with Tempus Fugit and a picture of a clock on it as well, which looks like they are tied in. So he's obviously got this picture, and it's basically from either part two or part three of this monk trilogy. So, right. I thought you guys should.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, Andre's, the fact that you haven't seen it on the Lonely TARDIS page when I posted it a couple of days ago, I think it was Saturday night, means that you fuckers don't go to the Lonely TARDIS Facebook page. Good.
We have a Facebook page?
You're an admin of it. You are an administrator.
Andre is at the Brainy Monkey. Yes, at the Brainy.
Yes.
And, no, that's really cool.
It's a great. It's a great picture. It's really cool. I mean, fascinated by these monks.
Yes, totally.
And while I'm going to say that, yes, this was. I mean, it was funny that we were DMing each other. It was me and Dali in particular. DMing each other while the episode was on, and it was like, okay, mind blown. And Dali was like 10, 15 minutes behind me, and yeah, okay, my mind's blown. And Steven's like,
I told you guys I had to watch the episode the day after.
I was driving home from a wedding very far away, and my girlfriend was reading it as you guys were reacting to it. I was like, you got to tell me what they're saying. And I just.
A wedding didn't go that well, huh? If she's still your girlfriend afterwards.
What?
You went to a wedding and came back with your... All right, never mind. I was...
He didn't say... He would have to have said... Hey.
So you guys were killing me, and I was so... built it up so much, and then... Oh, but it was so worth it.
Steven is actually jealous because you have a life, and he doesn't.
I'm what's called a freelance employee, so I'm not allowed... I'm legally not allowed to have a life.
I'm in recovery. You think I have a life?
What I think I like the most about this episode.
So anyway, yes. Sorry. You wanted my opinion on the episode. Yes, I thought. I mean, from the get go, I thought there was something up. As soon as the Pope mm-hmm. was talking Italian, much like Robert De Niro did in the Bananarama song.
I'm so mad I didn't pick up on that.
with the Pope talking Italian and not being translated, the fact that the book wasn't translated right. as well, because the TARDIS does translate images as well and words, you see. I was like, what the hell's going on? What's this this bigger thing? So obviously the fact that it's, you know, the episode is sort of like flips back and forth yeah. to, you know, we see Missy and she's, you know, she's about to be executed. And thought that was a great restrained performance. I really did. I thought Nardole was the breakout star of the episode.
Again he is, yeah.
And again, yeah, we talked, you know, I think last week it was, I said how restrained Matt Lucas has been in this season. And he, you know, I mean, he just popped up and kicked ass and then vanished again. And there were some bits where he was funny, but that whole, you know, interaction with Bill, where it's like, you will stay behind me and I'm authorized, as you know, as the guys pointed out earlier, I thought was brilliant. When it came to them finding out that it was a hologrammatic projection and him disappearing, it was like, holy shit, what? So yeah, I mean, look, Stephen covered it initially. Dali added a lot of other, you know, yep. great points. Sean, fuck all. But yes, you've covered it. Great episode. Don't like three partners. I don't like two partners unless they are back to back, because I want my fix. And I want my fix now.
Mm-hmm. But you got your fix.
Yeah, I want my fix.
You got your fix.
Well, no, I want episode 2 and 3. I want to know the whole fucking story.
Oh. Well,
I want it back to back to back.
Marcus is a binge watcher. And
I am a binge watcher. Yes, I am. Look, that. I mean, I'm the guy who watched Daredevil season 1 and season 2. You know, when they first came out, I spent all day in front of the TV and watched all the episodes back to back.
So there go ahead.
I'm going to throw out my legendary caveat.
Ooh.
And this has been raised earlier that, you know, the threat level on these monks, they've appeared. And the threat level is, you know, they've gone from, you know, a bunch of creepy looking guys with severe acne to, you know, Dalek level. But then the caveat is, this is Moffat we're talking about.
Yes, that was going to say, right? You know.
The odds are very short on us getting to episode 3 and him turning around and saying, we're all in a simulation, or there's a red button that deletes everything, or it's malware, or it's a rogue tweet gained sentience, and that's all that has to be done is be deleted or something. I just hope he actually has a 3-part plan that ends
right.
satisfactorily, because this takes us into the season finale and the start of the regeneration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and remember, doesn't the doctor in the simulation like take seconds off his time so he could see again?
But
it's part of the simulation. So.
I mean, and this is the thing with the simulation. I mean, I don't know how accurate that simulation could ever possibly sure. be. Because, I mean, if it couldn't handle the TARDIS translation circuit, how could it know that the doctor has this thing, well, you know, that takes mm-hmm. Minutes or regenerations off his life or whatever, so he can see again?
Yeah, right. Unless the creature that's running the simulation is also a Time Lord.
This is why you're thinking it's probably the John Sims master.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen people saying that. People also saying it's the Mondasian Cyberman.
Hmm.
And you're seeing them.
They're supposed to be the final episode, right?
Yeah. So I can't see that happening. Although monks, Mondas, master.
This is the slippery slope I was talking about earlier, right? Like if you really start to poke holes in this, whether or not it's the Time Lord tech or the simulation itself or whatever, like you will find it, right? And then you have to choose whether or not it's going to be sort of plot holy, or you're going to wave it away with like, well, no, they ran the simulation and the simulation of him was too good. And that's why he had the tech. But do we even know the tech worked right? Or maybe when he sent that recording, that's actually not something that would happen, or it wouldn't work. Or that's why he didn't get his sight back. You know what I mean? Like, it's I totally agree with Marcus on it. But I find that I'm resisting the urge to kind of go down that route, just because the rest of the episode was so good and there's so much you can hand wave away with this simulation that was so good. It ran for, did they say, by the way, was it 1,000 years or the?
They said dozens of times. I think they said we killed you dozens of times.
Right, but how long, like, were they simulating when they were planning to invade? Were they just simulating like for 1,000 years, or was it all of Earth's history? Like,
well, he did say they were simulating all of Earth's history, but like, you know, it's a computer world, so like, who knows like how fast that's running in real time versus all that. I don't think they ever actually like specified.
And there were different simulations going off at different times.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it sounds like they were running. And look, Sean, you're totally right. I mean, you could pick holes in every single episode of Doctor Who, in every single episode of television.
I mean, it's Doctor Who, you know?
Right. I just think it's easier with some episodes than others.
Time Lord lives in a box. So, yes, I mean, nitpicky is not really needed. I mean, just enjoy, you know. I should just enjoy the episode. And I thought, like I said, I thought the potential of this one is great. Mm-hmm. But as always, I'm just terrified it's going to get Moffitted.
I will say, though, it's been a long time since – I can't even remember the last time there was such a streak. So if there's ever a time to keep your worries sort of lower, it's now. I mean,
well, that's the thing. I don't want to get lulled into – look, Stephen Moffat's the biggest cock tease in television. I mean,
yeah, but maybe he's trying to go out a blaze of glory and stop being a cock tease for a year, you know?
Well, this is – I mean, somebody described this as a meat and potatoes series, mm-hmm. in that there's nothing been majorly world class in their opinion. I saw this on a post, but everything has been good, palatable. There's been no low points, mm-hmm. and even the lower episodes, like the emoji episode, were still a solid step above a lot of what we had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you compare Smile to, like, the Heart of Darkness or whatever the fucking school children episode was from last season or whatever. Like, good Lord. Good Lord. Like, nothing, like, that is the worst episode of this season. Smile is the worst episode of this season, I think. And, like, it's not even in the same universe as some of the worst episodes of last season and the season before that.
Well, Kill technically, this isn't in the same universe either, because it's in
the Kill the Moon. Oh, man.
Oh, those shit. Are the days.
The things you wipe from your memory.
Yeah, I mean, we got it right. It's Missy. Missy's in the vault. Now we know why. I mean, whoever those guys were.
Can we talk about that for a second, though?
Sure. Well, that's what I'm doing.
Well, the reason I want to specifically call that out. Go ahead.
Is that okay with you?
Please continue.
I mean, you know, I did raise it, and I might have a point to make.
Sure.
Okay. All right, Mr. Oh, I went off to a wedding with my girlfriend, and you fuckers were watching TV by yourself, you spuds.
I never assumed you were by yourself.
No, I was. My wife was in Austin, Texas last weekend. I was all alone all weekend.
Oh, I like to think I'm always there in spirit.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. yes, so
God.
These guys who we were looking at the beginning with Missy, they look kind of monkish to me.
Yes. Yeah.
And religion's obviously been a recurring theme with Moffat. He has some sort of fascination with it. I mean, you know, you think about it, we've had the papal mainframe and the silence chapter of that and blah, blah, blah.
Monks.
Headless monks.
Now we know what happened to their heads. They still got them here. You know, we're just out of order.
Well, I'm just wondering.
Would you let him finish, Stephen, please?
Well, I'm just wondering if these monks at the beginning who didn't get to kill Missy or didn't, you know, who basically killed all these people are now the monks that we're seeing later on down the line.
Interesting.
Because, I mean, their garb seemed relatively similar. And it also looked kind of Gallifreyan.
Mm-hmm. It did look Gallifreyan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe outer space monk type things. You know, they don't have a huge budget. You know, they're monks. They're not exactly rich. Perhaps they went to a knockoff store or a thrift store and got some old Gallifrey robes. But yeah, I mean, but then again, the vault still looked like it had Gallifreyan markings on it. Because remember, I brought that up last week, and I still think So I, but it doesn't, I'm wondering why they would have these Gallifreyan markings that have looked like, you know, things on the TARDIS or in Gallifrey or even on the Doctor's fob watch in the past. They've looked, you know, they've got that look about them, but these guys weren't Gallifreyan. Or are they? Is this Gallifrey's return?
Right.
I mean,
we don't know
I,
what they were, right?
Yep. Yeah, we don't know. We don't know, but it's just the imagery is very confusing. And maybe it's purpose. Maybe it's, again, you know, the BBC, tight budgets, cutbacks. They had to repurpose a bunch of stuff. But that was my major point, is that, you know, who are these guys and do they come back in? Was it a piece of comedy gold when it was like Doctor said, look me up? And he's like, yeah, all right, I'm looking you up. And it keeps on clicking and clicking and clicking and clicking. Sorry, I'll get my coat. and again, that Nardole piece where he turned up and he had Rivers' notebook. Mm-hmm. Again, pretty cool. I mean, this is obviously something that happened directly after the Husbands of River Song.
All right.
In the timeline. Yeah,
he literally chased the Doctor from Deryllium. Is that the name of the planet?
Deryllium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had Rivers, notebook that he'd been rebuilt and sent off. So this is literally like the morning after. And then, this 1,000 years thing, this 1,000 years that, you know, I mean, why would the Doctor bring Missy to Earth after all she's done? Why wouldn't he keep the vault in the TARDIS?
So
because she can't get out of it. Why put her in on Earth? Why not put her in the TARDIS in a locked room somewhere so he can at least travel? Why would he put the person who's tried to destroy Earth almost as many times as the Daleks on Earth?
So I actually have a theory I wanted to bring up to you guys about that stuff, and it's a theory / question because I wanted to double check on this because I haven't rewatched the episode like I'm sure some of you have, but. When the executioners all run away from the Doctor on that execution planet or whatever, am I crazy or does the Doctor not say to Nardole, help me get Missy into the vault? Like,
he says that.
So to me, that implies that vault already existed because the Doctor only makes that decision not to kill Missy right then and there because of Nardole. So presumably that vault must already exist on Earth If it does, it must be serving some other purpose prior to Missy, and he just happens to bring Missy there because it's a convenient place to put her. So if it already exists, and if Nardole, you know, already knew about it, because if he would just say to Nardole, like, help me get her into the vault, like, what purpose is it already serving? You know, why is it already on Earth? Was it there before?
It was inferred that the vault was the killers, you know, the guys who wanted to off Missy, their vault, because the body would be entombed in a quantum deadlock
toilet-sealed
vault and watched over for 1,000 years.
Oh, the vault is the thing that rises out of the water, isn't it?
I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Totally forgot about that. Okay,
Was there any chance, since the Doctor was the one who accepted the responsibility, was there any chance that knowing what he had to do and how to guard her, that he brought the vault?
I don't think so.
They raised the vault out of the water.
No, I know, but to Marcus's point, it is really Gallifreyan. So
right.
I mean, again, this is very confusing.
And they knew how to kill a Time Lord. So
I think if you're a planet that like spends your entire existence just like trying to figure out how to kill every single species on the planet, I bet I can totally see that just being like a we happen to have we have some Time Lord technology. The Time Lords gave us like this Time Vault thing because they need our services as well, because we are the execution planet, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. Or maybe it's just some bastardized version of Gallifreyan tech that, like, how else do you keep a Time Lord locked up if not with Time Lord technology? Because, like, I can't, you know, barring like the Daleks, I can't see anybody else in this universe being powerful enough to like contain a Time Lord for too long.
Well, she's supposed to be technically dead, but he messed around with everything.
Right.
You know, it was to hold a dead body after frying both hearts and all three brain stems and, you know, neutralizing
shutting down regeneration
process. Yeah. Although, again, Missy, and this is the other curious thing, the Doctor should be out of the Master should be out of regenerations. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. Are we looking at the Master having the same, or Missy having the same regenerative effect that was bestowed on the Doctor when Gallifrey, you know, peered through the crack in time and blew him a kiss.
In the John Sim stuff, they actually do say that the Time Lords gave him more regenerations. Like, they found him and gave him more, or regenerated him again, or whatever it was.
Well, we knew they could force a regeneration. They could force a regeneration, which would, this goes back to the whole Eric Roberts master, where, mm-hmm. you know, in that storyline, they forced him to regenerate into this Terminator 2 slimy snake type abyss thing. But I mean, my understanding.
But there's the Dr. Yana, though, like Dr. Yana transforming to John Sim after the Time Lords brought him back for the Time War.
Well, yeah, Dr. Yana was a regeneration of the Master who was found wandering a beach somewhere with his you know, he'd put himself into, you know, his Time Lord self into a watch. And then, you know, he aged. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Yeah. We don't know how long Dr. Yana was alive, but he was a regeneration.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, aren't there so many different stories about how he stole some regenerations and then used others and then lost them and then got them, and then who knows what happened after he, you know, put Gallifrey back where it needed to be. Like, there's just so much we don't know.
Could do with some clarification on that, but it's interesting that, you know, we're heading, you know, we still don't know what, you know, we're coming to the end of Moffat's era. We don't know what's happened with Gallifrey. Is he going to seal that up? We know John Sim is back as the Master. We know we've got Missy. We know that we've got the First Doctor appearing in the Christmas special that is supposed to take place. People are saying it's taking place during the Day of the Doctor and that final attack on Gallifrey to make it disappear and warp away. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff here that's sort of like making my mind go absolutely nutty. Maybe I'm reading too many internet theories.
Probably, but that's all right. You know, there were a lot of great little references in this episode. First of all, I love the whole angels and demons feel to this thing with CERN, with the Vatican. I loved the Pope appearing out of Bill's bedroom. I thought that was fantastic.
That was pretty good. The this is nothing to feel guilty about. And then suddenly the Pope starts bursts into the room and starts speaking in Italian, and then runs back off again.
Which is like exactly how it happens in my home as well, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know you like to just keep a big giant picture of the Pope above the bed at all times. So,
Of course. That's how I dream well at night. The whole bomb under the table, which, if you don't know that reference, so the CERN folks blow themselves up with bombs on the table. That's an old Hitchcock. I think Alfred Hitchcock probably explained it better, but it's about the concept of there's always this sort of, I don't want to call it a MacGuffin, but there's always this thing, just out of sight that could be so easily easily resolved. That just happens to be this simulation. But take a look at it. Do a search for Hitchcock and Bomb on the Table. It's pretty good. And then the whole, like, Nardole being fantastic. One thing I don't get, this is when Nardole meets, you know, when the Nardole and the Doctor get together. At what point does Dr. Mysterio take place?
Oh, God, I don't.
All right.
He is, right? Man, I can't even remember now. I've put so much of that episode out of my mind.
Yeah, well, he's Nardole is in there, but it's weird. So that must take place after this flashback, potentially. That does take place on Earth, right? And the Doctor swore that he wouldn't leave Earth, and that we come to find out that's his pledge, is to not leave the planet, which he did last week, right? In Knock Knock.
In Oxygen, you mean?
And I mean Oxygen, yeah. He left in Oxygen, so And then if, Mile, in a way, as well. He left the planet. But
what if the whole vault thing is another part of the virtual reality simulation that has been concocted by the Master?
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor's already in it and has been in it, perhaps. Going back to our, remember our discussions at the start of the season that the Doctor got downstairs and changed his mind very quick at the end from not wiping Bill's mind?
Yeah.
We've talked about, has this been a grand tour? What happens if all of that, all this entire season, is some sort of simulation? Maybe following on from at the end of last year
where
he was on Gallifrey. And then, you know, the ending was very confusing when we saw those two fly off in a TARDIS. But what happens if that was all a simulation? What happens if he never got out of the underbelly of Gallifrey?
I think that's walking things too far back. I don't know that they would do that.
I don't know. That may be too smart for Moffat.
I'm just throwing these things out there because I just think that it's funny. I mean, with Moffat in particular, never mind the Doctor lies, Moffat lies.
Right.
We don't know whether we're coming or going, but just going to say it one last time. It was a really, really good episode.
Yes, it was. Yes. Yeah. So the first go ahead. Sorry.
I was just one last final thing. Even if everything falls apart in episodes two and or in parts two and three like that, the Angels Take Manhattan or whatever the fuck that episode's called doesn't sully Blink, right? Like Blink is still a fine, great episode, even all by itself. Like, this episode is still really good, and it's still has really good suspense, has a really good payoff, has an emotional through line, has, you know, a good reveal and a good surprise at the end, you know, all that stuff with like a good out by the Doctor, with the Doctor like having a, you know, a interesting plan at the end that carries things forward. Like, even if by the end of this the monks all turn out to be a bunch of fucking like Tesselector robots and there's just tiny little masters inside each of them or something like that and it's all stupid or whatever, like, just as a suspenseful story, I think this worked really, really well all by itself.
Yeah, I agree. No, I was gonna ask you guys, so the first half of the season is done, right? We went through six episodes and there's, I think, 12 total. What are your thoughts? How good or bad or mediocre or what have these first six episodes been? I know, Marcus, you and I are probably in the same boat. I think it's been getting progressively better and better and better every week to the point where now it's going to be hard to top this. To me, it's going to be hard to top this episode over the next, at least the next week or so, because there's been some fantastic buildup. I'm really curious as to how they're going to do it. This almost feels like a mid-season finale, right? You'll see that in a lot of U.S. shows where they'll do a 6 or 10 episode arc, and then it'll go into mid-season mode for, you know, disappear for a couple months and come back.
Doctor Who did it with Good Man Goes to War.
Yep, Doctor did it a few years ago, Good Man Goes to War. This almost feels like that in a weird way, right? Because it's setting up something that's actually kind of momentous with the vault and the demon and everything, which may be really early in the season, but I'm fine with that. So it's going to be hard, in my opinion, to kind of, after this arc, to be topped with the second half of the season. But I think this first half was fantastic. From a consistency standpoint, every episode has been good. To some have been great. To some have been outstanding, like this one.
I think it's progressively gotten better every week. I mean, Pilot was a really solid start.
Yep.
Smile, as we said, if that's the worst, we'll be very lucky. Because I thought that was just kind of good, and maybe it surprised me that it was kind of good considering it was all about emojis. But then since then, I think every episode has upped the ante week after week after week. And I hope, you know, I keep on waiting for the other shoe to drop, for the bubble to burst. And I hope next week's show isn't the first one to drop. And yeah, if it keeps the standard of this week's, or even, you know, maybe drops down to oxygen levels, we're still in for a really good treat.
Steven?
I think I kind of maybe said my piece a little bit early, but yeah, I Like I said, I think the Doctor Who three-parter formula done right, which is the idea that like when they do three-parters, each part is basically its own unique story in and of itself that carries things forward. And this one just happens to be this and Turn Left. I mean, you know, not that there's a lot to compare it to in terms of three-parters, but like this, I would put this and Turn Left around the same kind of level of like just being an interesting story by itself that then carries things forward into an upcoming finale. You know, it doesn't necessarily need, you know, to be part of a three-parter to be interesting. And I think that is the mark of a successful episode and a successful multi-part episode, like that this stands alone as a strong thing. And boy, howdy, it would be really, really shitty if the first bad season was following on the heels of this. That would really, really suck. So yeah. I hope things continue burning along after this. So yeah.
And Sean.
I agree. It would be crazy if you ride this sort of wave up and then have to come crashing down afterwards. I don't know if that's happened. I don't know if we've seen that in recent Who memory where the first half just starts so strong and builds and builds and builds, and then the second half collapses on itself. I feel like we have a lot more hit and miss than we do consistent rise and falls. So, and the one thing that I really liked about this episode is I feel like if I wanted to, I could get new people into Who with this. Or at least show it to them, because this, I feel like, encapsulates so much of the show in 45 minutes. Between who the Doctor is, who his arch nemesis / best friend is, their weird relationship, you know, how he treats his companions, how he's sort of this tough guy, but also shows love for them, which Steven, you know, referred to earlier, telling her to call her girl, you know, how they sort of work and solve mysteries, just how big the threats can get. Like, all in all, like, if you isolate this, and I, you know, subject to change based on the next two episodes, but if you were to isolate this episode, this is pure Who. Like, you can show this as one example, just like you could with Tennant or Smith or even Eccleston episodes, and say, like, look, this is why people love this show. Like, yeah, it wasn't always, you know, it's not great every single week, although this season it's really damn good. But this stuff like this is why people stick around. Stuff like this is why people love this show, why people podcast about this show, a cosplay, and why it survived the last 50 years. Like, this is really phenomenal sci-fi television. And I love that about this week. So – And I really hope, to all of your all points, that we just continue. And as depressing as it is that we're going to be losing Capaldi and potentially maybe or maybe not Mackie next year, you know, if they can continue with this, even a fraction of the momentum that they have now, this is going to go down as probably one of the greatest seasons ever. Like, yeah, straight up ever. So, yeah, I think it's wonderful stuff.
Well, let's give this out of 5 space monks.
One last thing.
Yeah.
And I know I might be the minority now that they, you know, are doing this thing with Missy. I'm still not convinced she's the one in there. I still feel like it's, and maybe this is because I've been Moffitted for so many years now, but I still feel like there's going to be some twist there. I really do. We don't see her again. We don't hear her again. We haven't seen any sign. Now, granted, this is sort of like the conundrum I find myself in, right? Because I've been conditioned to want surprises and twists, but sometimes you should just appreciate the plot for where it goes, right? And up until this point, we've had everything that builds to the fact that she's in there, and now we have what seems like confirmation that she's in there, right? So on the one hand, I really like that that's been built up, and that's the story, and we get to see potentially why and what she did and where she disappeared to after the Daleks and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, and I will take some of the blame for this and blame some of it on Moffat and just television in general, I really am waiting for that other shoe to drop and for that mind-blowing twist to come that always comes, which Moffat rarely these days actually successfully knocks out of the park. But, like, I'm still waiting for it, and I'm still sitting here being like, I don't buy this. We haven't seen it. They haven't been on the screen together. We haven't heard her from the other side. I genuinely think there's still some twist coming with the vault. And I don't even think I'll be upset if I'm wrong, but I just can't – right now, this week, I cannot buy that she's in there. Like, not 100% anyway.
Or not in there by herself, maybe. Or, you know, there could be more version. In the
like, oh, it yeah. will not – it will not surprise me in the least if she like regenerates or regenerates backwards or goes forward or whatever, and some other version of her comes out. Or, you know, to Marcus's point earlier, this is some elaborate thing and she hasn't been in there this whole time, but someone else has, and she did a switch when the doctor wasn't paying attention. You know what I mean? Like, I think that it's coming, and but I won't even be unhappy if I'm wrong. So.
Okay, Space Monks. Out of 5 Space Monks, Marcus, what do you give this?
6.
6 out of 5. Nice.
Is that a first?
Yeah, I think it's a first. I think
at least it's been a long time.
Steven?
I'm going to give it a 4.5 just because, for as much as I'm going back on my word, I know it, like I'm being such a hypocrite with this, just because it is the first part of a 3-parter. I'm not 100, like I'm leaving a little bit of wiggle room there, like just a little bit of like parallel parking space for Moffat to sneak in a fuck up by the end of this story. So
well, why don't you take each episode on its own basis, and then we'll score all 3 at the end?
Yeah, I could do that. So, you know what? Sure. Why? Like, I like that idea actually enough that I'm just going to say, go ahead and give it a 5. There you go.
All right, that was easy.
I'm also going to give this a 5. This is maybe my first 5 of the season. Loved it, loved it, loved it. I can't wait to rewatch it, which I'll probably do tomorrow. And Sean.
5.
Excellent. So we all love this episode
first, but it's definitely up there. So
I think it's 2 weeks running. It's pulled in maximum, isn't it? Because last week's was.
Oh, yeah.
Oxygen pulled in.
Yeah,
5's across the board as well.
Oh, yeah.
You're,
yep.
You're right.
Good. Maybe we need to rethink out of 5. Maybe we need to go to 10 point scale.
It'll be like do half points.
With half points along the way, and maybe some. Just kidding.
Let's face it, we're really fucking with the Metacritic right now.
Yeah, that's true. People's bonuses are on the line with this shit, you know?
Goodness.
Are we pretty much wrapped on this particular discussion?
I think we are. We're wrapped up on this discussion.
Okay, so I just want to take a minute and discuss something serious. As we're recording this, news is coming through of what's gone on in Manchester, in England. The fact that there seems to be some sort of attack at Ariana Grande concert, and there are a bunch of people dead and even more injured. And you got to remember that most of these are kids, and they're British kids. Obviously, so I mean, you know, we see terrorist attacks all the time, and it's just we're assuming it's a terrorist attack,
right? We don't know for sure yet.
We don't know for sure, but people are saying that it was a suicide bomber. And I mean, look, everybody jumps to conclusions, but what we do know is that something terrible has happened in my home country, an area where they've filmed Doctor Who in the past, so there is a tenuous tie-in. But just even on a human decency level, our thoughts are with everybody who was at that concert and their families tonight, because a lot of kids went to see Ariana Grande, and a lot of kids aren't coming home tonight. And there might also be kids coming home without their parents and guardians tonight. So we just want to take a minute to think about them. I mean, we're all funny guys, and we like to talk about Doctor Who and have our fun. But, we see some stuff on Twitter. Some people have posted very inappropriate shit, and I'd love to take the time to kick the shit out of them at E3, especially if one of them's a games journalist, as he claims to be. Well, fuck, I might not make it out of E3. But yes, we own, you know, just these, you know, our thoughts are with Manchester, and all these people who have just been affected by a senseless tragedy.
With that, we're going to be signing off. You can find us Lonely TARDIS on lonelytardis.com, at Lonely TARDIS on iTunes. Please rate and review us. You can find us all individually. We'll go through our names here, but yeah, please keep the families in your prayers. If there are opportunities to donate, please donate. And this is where times at the Red Cross and other areas totally need our help and support. So find us individually. You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. Sean, where can they find you?
At Sean Horton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
Steven?
You can find me on Twitter at
at Steven Strom, STEVENSTROM. You can find my work on Zam.com, Ars Technica, recent article on Waypoint, and all those things.
Get him, Marcus. Get him, Marcus.
And you you can go check on Facebook. That my name is still Steven Strom on there.
Steven's left the building.
He had a good run.
He had a very good run, and he's been muted. You can find Steve. Steve is a fantastic writer and a
really
journalist. Yeah. And he tweets his links out like a good journalist should, so that, you know, go to his Twitter page, and so we don't have to go through the full frigging credits every week. You can find me at Annoyed Gamer, and I'm going to put this out there. Please feel free to visit our Facebook page, give us a like, take a look at some of the topics that we've posted there. We're going to start asking for thoughts on episodes now as they air, so that we can, you know, not only take comments from Twitter, but we'll take them from the Facebook post as well. And it's a good way to interact with all of us. Dally posts there, yep. I post there. Stephen and Sean are too big to post there, I'm afraid. They're off with their lives and their big pieces. But we're also putting, you know, we're also putting stuff up there that's, you know, fun little stories or things that we, you know, we see. And, you know, you can always submit that stuff to us as well to post there, because, you know, we want to share some of the interesting theories and stories about Doctor Who. We draw the limit at some of the stupid memes, because some of it is just absolutely dumb as fuck. But, the rest of the stuff is kind of fun. So come and interact with us on a regular basis on our Facebook page.
All right. With that said, thank you, everybody. We will see you on the next episode of Lonely TARDIS.